Hello and welcome to what will be the last edition of Editing Aloud this year. And as is normal before Christmas, there's a bit of a lull in the news, but in South African terms, the lull is still pretty exciting. And Warren, you've been to a press conference this morning by something which we really don't hear a lot about of or from, called the Government Employees Pension Fund, the GEPF, whose funds the PIC manage. Is that right?
Yes.
And they've been talking themselves now directly about the losses they've suffered because of the investments that the PIC has made on their behalf. Is that, have I got this right?
Correct, yes.
So the PIC invested in independent newspapers, for instance, and a range of other things like Steinhoff, and the GPF has had something to say. What do they have to say?
Well, certainly in the case of Independent, a loan that they provided to Sekhunjalo to purchase the assets of Independent Media, they've written down the full value of the loan that was owed to them.
How big was the loan?
They were carrying it at R1 billion at the end of the previous
financial year. Iqbal Survey, R1 billion.
That's right, okay. Yeah.
So the PIC did, not the GEPF.
Well, remember that the GEPF gives the PIC its assets with the investment mandate, and then the PIC administers those assets on behalf of the GEPF.
And does the GEPF...
This is the money of government employees.
No, I understand. Does the GEPF just sit idly by then while the PIC does whatever it wants with the money, or does it stand up and say, explain, please?
It does keep a very keeps a lid on the developments, and certainly they give a, it's very formalized. There's investment mandate across different asset classes, and they obviously supervise that. But of course, Peter, you're dealing with 1.8 trillion rand in assets here, so that is a big number, and that's why obviously you need an organization like the PIC to administer that for them. Right. But yes, they've written down the full value of the assets. And they said that Independent is now in default with them. They were supposed to meet a 400 million rand payment at the end of August, which I understand was for interest. They've missed that, and the two parties are now negotiating, that is the PIC and Independent Media, as to how they can solve the problem.
Right.
But in the interim, the GEPF has written down the full value of that loan to zero.
But surely we'll come back, Warren, in a minute. Surely when you default on a loan, doesn't that trigger... business rescue or the collapse of a company or bankruptcy of some kind? Isn't that what normally happens?
I mean, yeah, if you're defaulting on the loan, you know, there's a problem with your finances. So essentially what should happen is the guys who you owe money would then apply for you to repay that money. And then if you can't repay it, you go into liquidation or business rescue or whatever the process is.
Okay.
So, the fact that they can't repay their debts should be a big worry.
But
they are in the media business, which is,
for sure.
It's a tough business.
Yeah, I know, it's a tough, rough, tough world. But Warren, the 1 billion is the least of their problems.
Yes, I mean, certainly in terms of these direct loans that they made, they took a bigger hit on the loans to an entity called Lancaster 101, which is what they half own.
Yeah.
But involved in that is a consortium that were using the loans to buy shares in Steinhoff. So it's not
who
entirely...
Who runs that consortium?
That's Jahendra Naidu, who was the one-time board member of Steinhoff, and he's now the chair of Pepkor Holdings, which is... one of the subsidiaries of
Jayendra took the government employees pension fund money into Steinhoff
as the leader of a consortium.
How much?
9 billion. And unfortunately, that wasn't all tiers, because they wrote down the value by 3 billion. But the investment in Steinhoff was partially protected by a financial instrument called a collar, which means that if the Steinhoff share price plunges, they were protected at a certain level.
Yeah.
So not the entire value of the investment, but certainly two-thirds of it, from what we can establish, which means that the hit is only 3 billion at the moment as opposed to the full 9.
Presumably people would have known that in advance, or is this new that what you heard today?
It is new. Obviously, we knew that there were loans into Lancaster before this, and we knew that Steinhoff was underpinning it, so we knew it was coming. Yeah. And now, they've obviously...
And is there any action they're going to take, or are they just going to talk about it?
No, certainly when we raised the issue of the PwC report perhaps not being fully published or not published at all, both the GEPF and the PIC said they would be very stridently taking that up because of the damages.
Sorry, the PwC report into?
the forensic report into what happened at Steinhoff,
okay.
Which was commissioned by the company,
right.
Which is due to be released soon.
Yeah.
Both organizations, the PRC and the GEPF, said that they would be stridently following.
Have they read Rob Rose's excellent book on Steinhoff and yours, in fact? I mean, it's a joint effort.
I contributed a little bit, but I'm sure they probably have.
Yeah. I came back from somebody, and I was sitting next to two people in the plane coming back from Cape Town yesterday. They were both reading your book, Rob.
Really? I'm going, this is ridiculous, made up.
I signed it for you.
I mean, the only reason that anyone reads the book is because you wrote on the front of it and said you should read this.
Yeah, I didn't, and my quote didn't get on the front. I always end up being put on the back page of these things. I'm going to stop doing that now. They always take Max Dupree's quote or Jacques Poe's quote and put them in the front. It's not fair. So does anything happen now? I mean, the GEPF has said something. Did they talk about the PRC at all? Are they happy with the PRC's management of its money?
Yeah, obviously we raised the issue about the fallout or potential fallout from the PRC inquiry, which is beginning to develop at the moment. And they said they would be monitoring that. But of course, they also alluded to the fact that most of their investments into things like fixed income instruments and shares are passively managed. And that accounts for the large bulk of the GEPF's 1.8 trillion.
Yeah.
So while there has been these issues with Lancaster, with independent media, you know, as a fraction of their portfolio, it's virtually less than 1%.
Yeah, yeah. So they're all right. They're going to be okay for Christmas and all of that kind of stuff.
At this point,
anybody, if you've got 1.8 trillion in the market, Rob, just do this off the top of your head, which you can.
Sure.
What's happened to it in the last 6 months?
Well, I mean, because it's so huge, it's basically tracked the performance of the market, and the market's been down this year. So essentially, you've seen
15% fall.
Yeah, yeah. So you've seen it.
How big a fall?
15%
fall
this year.
So you've seen the value of your assets drop, but the PIS, the Government Employees Pension Fund, it's a defined. Defined benefit fund, right?
Oh, so really? Essentially, how lucky for that.
Yeah, so they're not really going to be impacted too much, and luckily it's quite a huge amount in there, so it's not as if government has to stand good for them yet. But you know, the fact is, 1.8 trillion is a lot of money.
Yeah.
So that's how things can disappear on the margin. Yeah. You can lend a billion rand, or you can lend 200 million rand to your mates. You can have political abuse and not see it because it's such a small part of a giant portfolio, and that's the concern of the PIC, I think.
According to some good news, is that we have a new National Director of Public Prosecutions.
Yeah, so Shamila Batoyi was announced yesterday as the new NDP.
Is she the right? I mean, there were a couple of strong candidates there. Was she the right one?
I think so, particularly because if you saw her interview, she was the last person to be interviewed. She was. She's an advisor in the Office of the Prosecutor in the International Criminal Court.
Yeah.
And she literally told the interviewing panel that she really doesn't need this job. She lives a very good life in The Hague.
Yeah.
But she really wants to come back and change the NPA around. She used to be a director of public prosecutions 10 years ago in KwaZulu-Natal.
Okay.
She obviously has lots of successes under her belt. And interestingly, her then deputy, who is also being considered for this job, actually spoke glowingly about her in his interview. So that for me was quite an interesting thing. So yesterday, Ramaphosa announced her, and then she came forward and spoke, saying that this was a historic moment for women, and then also talking about, you know, that she will stand behind prosecutors in their pursuit for justice.
And she was also very. Went out of her way to mention that state capture had been a huge problem and this we needed to get over somehow.
Yeah.
And presumably that's what she will do.
Yeah, so she said it in her interview as well, where she said that, you know, the role of the NPA has always been to in the interest of victims. And she says South Africa is, as a country, is now a victim of state capture.
Yeah.
And I think that resonated well with the people that were interviewing her. And she starts in February because she has to serve her notice at The Hague.
Yeah.
And it will be interesting to see, you know, what she sort of prioritizes. We've been through this before. You know, when John Abrams was announced, it was, you know, this is a career prosecutor, he will be great. When
I don't remember anybody saying that.
No, he did. I remember.
Really?
I was at the event.
Really?
At the actual event.
Sean Abrams saying he was going to be great.
It was Sean saying he was going to be great.
And then when Nkolisi Ngasana was appointed, you know, people were saying he's an outsider, so let's see how that goes. So I think political parties are being a bit cautious to respond. Obviously, the ANC welcomed this, but I saw the EFF saying they noted they don't want to really, you know, get ahead of themselves.
Yeah.
They've learned a lesson from Busisiwe Mkhwebane, the public protector.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, people are going to watch how she makes decisions. I think for her, from judging from her language, both yesterday and in the interview, she really, really is going to prioritize the internal governance systems of NPA, which is what affects the external stuff.
Which is what's broken.
Absolutely, which where you see Estina cases being dropped, etc.
Yeah. There's still the minor problem of four deputy directors of public prosecutions who none of whom are any good for a new broom. Can they be gotten rid of?
Yeah, so it's a difficult process to get rid of deputies, two of which are facing a commission of inquiry into their fitness to hold office.
That this is Nomgcobo Jiba
and Lorenzo Mkhwebi.
Is he also a deputy?
Yeah, so okay. Those two would be dealt with in the course of the first quarter.
Yeah.
But you know what was interesting for me was during these interviews, the first person to be interviewed is the current acting national director of public prosecution, Silas Ramaite. No, we've never heard of him before. He's been a deputy for the past 15 or 20 years. He's been there for ages and he's acted so many times. Mm. But when you actually heard him talk about the problems, he said things like he doesn't have any new ideas for the NPA, there's no problem in the NPA. And I mean, we were flabbergasted as the media, we've been reporting on the NPA for five or 8 years, where a person is acting, is in this position and he sees nothing wrong and he actually doesn't think that anything needs to be done differently. So he's still in that position.
Yeah. Andrea Johnson was another very strong candidate. Is it possible that she could be drawn into this picture as a new deputy, particularly in charge of prosecutions?
Yeah, so it's a long time until you get to that point.
But she's got a problem.
Yeah, so I don't think it's a problem. I think for this position, because she was considered for the NDPP position. And the thing that really worked against her a little bit for consideration, I mean, she was shortlisted to the five names submitted to Ramaphosa. But I think, you know, politically, what stood against her was the fact that she was involved in the prosecutions of former and late police commissioner Jackie Salebi.
Yeah.
And in that case, we know that the Krejcikam case was involved in there. And she was the one that signed off the section 204
the Agati, which was a disaster.
Yes. Mm. And so she,
which enabled a whole lot of people to get off.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah.
Scot-free.
And she was asked about that and she defended her decision. I mean, she's really she was involved in the Oscar Pistorius case.
Yeah.
She's involved in a lot of high profile cases. She's a very good prosecutor.
You've got to make tough calls sometimes.
Absolutely. But sometimes someone in the panel raised this matter informally by saying sometimes you don't need the very good prosecutor sitting in boardrooms. You actually need them in the courtrooms because there's really an urgency for good prosecutors who really can do their jobs. And what happens is because of the system of the NPA, good prosecutors end up sitting and doing admin work so that they can get increases in upward mobility. But the reality is that we need good prosecutors in courtrooms so that when the complicated cases come forward, then there are people of her caliber that are able to sit down and work with investigators to work things out. And the one other issue is under Sean Abrahams, there was a sort of a centralized unit. And they were called the Priority Crimes Litigation Unit. And they were almost like the sort of para unit of the NPA. They investigated Pravin Gordhan. They investigated, the Ivan Pillay charges. And they and basically, during this interview process, many candidates who still work for the NPA in different positions said that that unit is at the center of the problems. Because ordinary prosecutors would be tasked with the case and they would be, working with investigators from the Hawks to prosecute matters. And then cases are just sort of pulled away from them. And so that unit... I remember Shamila Batoy also making reference to it, that kind of structure needs to be replaced. And the NPA, like one of the candidates said, even if the Pope was appointed, the problems can't be solved overnight. So I think Shamila Batoy is not the Pope.
We've got a lot of problems in this country, as we well know, that can't be solved overnight. But it's quite nice watching them begin to be solved. So 2018, Cyril Ramaphosa's first year was going to be the new dawn. A lot of people, a lot of haters out there think it was the new yawn. And we're going to find out a little bit what our panel thinks. But Sunita, we are no longer in recession, which is a kind of a good thing, isn't it?
So it was expected. Economists thought that there would be 1.6% growth, a boost in manufacturing, and a surprise rebound in agriculture. Saw quite a strong performance in the third quarter.
And is there any trend in there that you can spot that sort of will give you hope going into 2019, or is it just like the currency turned wrong or right at the right time? Or
I think it's quite difficult to predict. I mean, South Africa hasn't had three quarters of positive growth in the last few years.
Yeah.
Early indicators already show that quarter four is going to perform badly again.
Yeah.
Agriculture is likely to lose all the gains that it's made. So I think it's quite difficult to...
And is that an export? So basically when people are saying the Rand is having the best November in living memory against the dollar, then the next thing that's going to happen is it's going to crush our exports, right?
Could be, yeah. And then we sort of see reversals in manufacturing, mining performing badly once again.
Yeah. Okay, so we won't have, I mean, we won't, you know, it's enjoy your Christmas,
it's
Rob.
Very it's very South African. Yeah. Oh, sure, it looks good now, but it's going to be terrible next one.
but I mean, just genuinely, Ron, I mean, how do you think Cyril has done? He's been, I mean, if it's hard to imagine, and we forget, right?
Yeah.
Had he not won last December, Jacob Zuma would still be the president now.
Yes, he would be. Oof, yeah, he would be the scariest thing, and NDZ would be sitting in the Tweedy House. I think he's done well. I mean, I think about 11 ministers are gone. Like
you and me, months. And I was saying that, I would be called, I cannot tell you how many names I've been called over the past couple of days.
Yes, I can imagine.
Lickspittle, Quisling, whatever it might be.
You know. No, I mean, it's not, I mean, he's got in there, and immediately, from February, he took out the president, right? So I see about 11 ministers I was counting, I think a bit more than that. The Zondo Commission has gone ahead. Nugent has gone ahead. I mean, next week he'll be in front of Zondo Commission, hopefully taking ownership of state capture. So I think he actually done pretty well. When you win the ANC on those thin margins, you would think he has to walk a bit of a walk when it comes to his own party. But he's done some things there that I'm very impressed by him. Actually, I've been impressed by him throughout even last year, heading up to Nasrec. We've underestimated him a lot. I've been underestimating. A lot of people have, and I'm in the camp that says he's done an excellent job. We've done better. I mean, Eskom is still. He must make a hard call about Eskom, which I think is the biggest country risk we have at the moment. Is and he has not come with the solution, a long-term solution.
No one has,
right? No. And we kind of know what it is. It's a balance sheet question. It's about whether equity investment comes into Eskom. But that's the only way. Looking at Eskom. Eskom makes about 40 billion odd, and they spend 50 billion on finance costs, it's debt costs. This thing is going to be there for eternity unless there's some balance sheet solution.
Yeah.
So outside of Eskom, I don't think he's... Well, he's changed the board. Governance is fine. They're looking after me. Well, there's some load shedding now. It is
some load shedding,
which is almost inevitable, right? But
we're going to come to load shedding in a minute. Rob Rose, Cyril's here, good or bad?
I think overall it's good. Overall it's good. I mean, in the credit side, I think he had a lot of impetus to get rid of people that he should have got rid of. Sean Abrams, Tom Moyani. Moyani's taken him to court, but Cyril says it doesn't matter. I'm sticking to my guns, and you must go. And that's the right approach. Mm. You've got to get Moyani out. You've got to get Sean Abrams out. You've got to fix these things. On the debit side, there are the ministers like Batabile Dlamini that are still around. Mm. So he hasn't.
But she'll still be around even after his new cabinet gets announced. She's on the NEC.
Yeah,
that's true.
You've got to keep the NEC sweet.
So that is the inflection point of his political position that is still quite fragile, like Ron pointed out.
Yeah.
And I think the trade unions are a real point of that. So the ANC Women's League is Batabile Dlamini's constituency.
Yeah.
That presumably is why she's still around. The unions still have a strong sway, which is why public sector jobs have not been cut like they needed to be to please the ratings agencies.
Yeah.
So we have things that Cyril hasn't done, but he has acted on other things. So I think net positive, but there are still areas where he's still in debt.
Yeah. Juanita, politically, how's his year been? I mean, is he stronger now than he was at the beginning?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that he was clever when he delivered his State of the Nation address, where he sort of gave deliverables, and he's now since met it. The only thing I think from the stuff that he's sort of promised to do is the Moyani finality on the Moyani SARS turnaround, which supposedly by the end of the month would be sorted out. Things like looking at the PIC, the reconfiguration of government. For me, that's something I'm really looking at, because he's already started with the last reshuffle where he decided to merge telecommunications and communications. It was a stupid decision in 2014 when former President Jacob Zuma
split them up. But he's given them to a minister now, has gone and basically done the most idiotic thing I've ever seen by trying to save the jobs of a few people, which would make Cyril's job as a sort of commander of the economy much more hard.
Yeah, but at the same time, you're also dealing with the political fallout, and that's the pressure Kusatu is putting on Ramaphosa at the moment. And they're putting pressure on three things. The first thing is they're really not happy with Tito Mboweni.
Yeah.
They really want him to be whipped in line.
Inflation targeting.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just his tweeting abilities.
And they said that. They said he has a potty mouth in a formal meeting.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, the embarrassment or the political consequences of job shedding at SABC.
Yeah.
So those are some of the pressures that, and Rob makes a very important point, is that he's sort of been pressured from business. He's been pressured,
for sure.
And there's also immediate crises that he had to sort of deal with on a day-to-day basis, like the resignation of Ntlatlanene, etc. So for me, what my critical analysis of Ramaphosa's presidency is that he takes good decisions, but I think he also initially undermined the challenge that he was facing. And secondly, I think that there's some miscommunication between his advisors. And you see it in the smaller things. You don't see it in the big things. You see it in the manifestation of smaller things. For example, stupid decision. When the interviews were taking place with the NDPP, who takes the decision to shut the media out? Mm-hmm. And then you have to be taken to court.
Yeah.
Those were decisions Jacob Zuma was sort of caught with his pants down.
And who does run his office? I mean, who's his chief of staff?
Chief of staff is a woman by the name of Roshin Singh. She's an administrator. She apparently she's very good and very efficient. But there's no sort of strong center like we had with former President Jacob Zuma, where Lakhela Kaunda was the center of it all. He's been advised by Stane Speed, who's his political advisor. He's also advised by Bijani Chawuke, who used to run his campaign.
So there's no one central.
There's no one
central sort of hand whose word is law.
Yes, but that's because.
Like, say, Atul Gupta.
Absolutely, but they when I see it manifest when you have a political statement and a legal argument not talking to each other.
Yeah.
In the Batabile Dlamini case, you politically want to distance yourself away from her and isolate her, but at the same time legally you want to defend her. And so I've raised this with them to say, why is this kind of there's no one person that runs the president?
Yeah.
And they say because he's too strong and he runs himself and he reads every document and he signs everything himself. I don't know if that's a good thing.
Well, that'll have to be unlearned. Sunita, the economy, better or worse off for him being there?
I think we're going to have to wait until after the election.
Yeah.
Policy certainty is definitely still a factor. And until that's sorted out, we're still going to see low levels of confidence.
Yeah.
But we also need to take into account that it takes a while to see change.
Yeah.
So he's sending out all the right messages.
I wanted just to talk about load shedding. It occurs to me the other day that the Optimum mine, the famous Gupta mine, used to be a tired mine to Hendrina Power Station. It's not functioning, right?
Yeah, it's not.
So Eskom is now saying it's running out of coal, or it's got like 3 hours of coal left or whatever at some stations. Optima is the second biggest coal mine in the world.
Yep.
How can it not operate?
When's the business rescue, right?
Just all of those technicalities, we are running. We don't have power because we've got no coal.
Yeah. Last November, they were saying Eskom had 40 days worth of coal, and that was because Optimum was running. December came, half of Optimum's 400,000 tons a month. They gave 200,000 tons a month. So immediately, since last December, it's sort of been tapering off, and now there's nothing coming from it.
Have all the tired mines been untied from their power stations?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a combination of that. And the thing is, remember when Brian was still the CEO of Eskom and he killed the cost plus mines thing with Exxaro and said we're not investing in it. These guys
cost
now,
plus and tired mine being the same.
Yeah, thing, same thing, right? So these guys are not. So now Eskom needs more coal from them, but they're telling them we need money from you to carry on build because you cut all those. So that's all come back to haunt Eskom, and that's the situation where it is right now. It's almost.
Yeah.
But the impact on the economy of load shedding is huge in terms of sentiment. I mean, I think it's...
It must be. It'll be okay, I presume, Juanita, over Christmas, when people are sort of relaxing. It doesn't really matter whether it's dark or
light. When you have candles.
When you've got candles anyway. But, I mean, if this load shedding isn't fixed by the time the country comes back to work in January, there's going to be big trouble, politically.
And there hasn't been any political statement. That's by baffling me, that people are just sort of letting it be and letting the board of Eskom sort of waffle through this.
Yeah.
And I would think that there would obviously be, it's summertime, firstly.
Yeah.
And secondly, it's so close to the elections. If the economy,
But as I understand it, by March, they'll be fine. This what's happening now is they're doing the maintenance that they've left for the past 3, 5, 6 years, even under previous guys who claim to be doing great maintenance. So the idea is now the load shedding is a feature for our summer, December, early Jan, but by March we'll be ready for winter. And that is the key requirement is by winter they'll be fine. And that's the election season. That's the well, it's not.
Is that the spin or is that actually
what's happening? No, like, they're just doing maintenance now. They're literally shutting down and it takes, there's about two mines that'll take 6 months to get up and ready. And a power station. Yeah. So by March, the promise is they'll be there. But as we say, the long-term fix is Eskom and its balance sheet, which is another question altogether, and this debt pile.
So you're saying it's sort of logical?
Every December, they go on maintenance drive, generally. They go on maintenance. So generally, in normal...
But they don't December tell the government they want 100 billion.
Yeah, no, they don't. this is like them putting the pressure on. But the pressure is there. The point is they're saying, fine, with all the money they're borrowing
surely there's nowhere on earth, Sunita, that the government can simply take away from Eskom 100 billion rand of its debt. Because what will it do to the government's own...
Debt
ratios.
Balloons and credit rating agencies have flagged this. Mm. I mean, Eskom is one of the biggest concerns, along with low growth.
Would it be awful just to simply sort of isolate Eskom and say to the IMF, please, can you, or the World Bank, can you help us solve this thing? I mean, you know, we will need to borrow X amount of money. Can we borrow it from you? And, you know, whatever you prescribe, we'll take the medicine. Otherwise, we go on like this forever.
That'll be, you know...
No. But, I mean, there's a real danger that all the lights go off.
Yeah.
What do we do then when all the lights are off?
I think the risk is just sort of rather just limp along.
Yeah.
I think they then cut your feet off. You know, that's the thinking, I think.
But it's the balance sheet fix that as Ron says, is the real issue that must get fixed soon. That's a deeper restructuring.
And we kind of know what it is. Like they know what it is. Becky tried to do it in 98, 2001. That was the plan. So almost go back to those plans you had then and go and move forward with them.
We'll restructure. But meanwhile, you please restructure your own Christmases. And good luck. And I hope it doesn't get too dark. We'll see you again early next year. Thank you.